since we're talking about someone who had a pivotal role in labor, how did she take up the issues of the labor movement? Certainly, we know that Lucy Parson was active in trying to save the Scottsboro Boys. And despite her renunciation for whether it was for issues of identity or survival of her own essence as a woman of African ancestry, she was deeply immersed in the civil rights and the human rights movement. But how did she get involved, and what is her spirit and her energy about the workers' movement?
Well, I think she saw the labor movement as not being, because we're looking at it from the distance, our prism looking back. But at the time, I think she saw that as a civil rights and a human rights issue too. Because they, you know, Lucy and Albert arrived in Chicago, there had been a depression going on. The railroads were very powerful and had expanded across the country. And then there was a standstill and all these people out of work. So they arrived in Chicago seeing scores of people out of work. People were crammed into these tenement homes. And I think they just saw here was a new cause. Here was something else that we could fight for. Because they just come from Texas, chased by the Klan out of Texas, where they had been working for black voters' rights together. This cause just set them on fire. They fought for exploited workers' rights, for the unemployed. And, you know, these are issues that are still, you know, at play today.
They saw the labor issue as being a way to actually go after their social initiatives.
Yes.
Because socialism was now Albert Parsons' passion.
Yeah.
And they saw that if they could help change the 8-hour movement, that would help them along with the greater picture, which was the revolution that was going to turn it into a socialist society, which is what he wanted.
They didn't see anarchy as being a dirty word. It was a way for people to live cooperatively. And for them, the idea of unions, labor unions, was epitomized that. It was the role model for living cooperatively. They loved that.
So, and it was interesting because anarchy and anarchist was a derogatory term that was applied to them by the capitalist papers. I mean, they were called anarchists, and they decided they were like wearing it as a badge of honor.
Right.
It's like, okay, fine. You want to call us anarchists? We're anarchists then.
Because they were social revolutionaries, socialist revolutionaries, I think is how they originally referred to themselves. David Shipler's book, The Working Poor. Reading that book, it's a great preparation for doing this play, because I get fired up reading it. it gets me angry. I cry while I read it, and you see these people who are out there working their ass off, and they are dirt poor. And the system and the situation that Albert and Lucy were fighting so many years ago is still in existence. This subset of people still exists. I can just imagine how when they encountered this then, how it just – they just said that we've got to change this, and we have the answer.
And when Albert Parsons was executed, he saw himself as a martyr to die for his convictions for these causes. But he really thought that this social revolution was imminent. He figured this is going to happen, and it never did, at least not here.
Well, the play is clearly historic, contextual, and topical, and hopefully for all who see it will spark the wonder of committing oneself to the enhancement of the human condition. And I know that you have a scene also that deals with the issues of labor organizing.
We have actually two scenes, plus we can almost do back to back. The first one is a strike. This is about the May Day March, and it's actually set up by Albert Parsons Jr. And then the second scene following that is actually just sort of a recap of exactly what happened during the Haymarket riot. There's a wonderful monologue that both Albert Jr. and Lucy do in the play. And then we go right into the courtroom drama. Now, what we've done on stage is this is where we get to play with our puppets. So for our radio audience, we need to just sort of visualize what exciting drama might be happening on the stage with all these insane puppets. So when we get to that part, just really have fun with the idea of what could be happening on the stage.
The first May Day March. My father helped organize the nationwide 8-hour day demonstrations. I was 7 years old, and I was there.
Eight hours for work. 8 hours for rest. 8 hours for sleep.
From Washington and Baltimore.
To Boston, Philadelphia, and New York.
350,000 strong. 80,000 on strike in Chicago alone.
If you work by the piece or you work by the day.
Reducing the hours increases the pay.
We declare war on the 16-hour day.
Big business doesn't like what it's hearing.
Fear is in the air.
But it's not the revolution they expect.
But it is a revolution.
In case you've never heard of the Haymarket Riot, here are the facts. It was a peaceful and sparsely attended protest that mostly had dispersed. It was raining so hard, Mom and Dad had taken me and my sister inside to a hall nearby. Then, 200 police suddenly marched in. We heard an explosion. One policeman was killed instantly. 6 police died later of their wounds. 70 officers were wounded, many by their fellow officers' bullets in the confusion that followed. 50 protesters were shot or clubbed by police. Several were killed. No one knew who threw the bomb, but my father was right. They were looking for men like him, and that's why he ran away.
The police made raids throughout the city. The state attorney publicly announced, make the raids first and look up the law afterwards. The police threatened me and the children, trying to find out where Albert was. They arrested anyone with even the slightest suspicion of radical activities. The arrests were made without warrants. Many of the accused were beaten while in custody. There were 31 indictments. Only 8 stood trial for murder.
Dad felt guilty that he'd run off after the riot and left his friends behind to face trial. And he couldn't stand being out of the spotlight. So he turned himself in.
Your Honor, if you are going to try innocent men, I will not stand by in silence. I appear in this court of my own free will and voluntarily surrender myself. Your Honor, I request a separate trial.
Denied!
The jury was handpicked by a special bailiff. This bailiff was appointed by the state attorney who was prosecuting the case. Needless to say, the jury was extremely biased.
Biased.
12 men, good and true.
Biased.
All the jury members were prominent businessmen who had openly stated that they were against the labor movement. One was a relative of the dead policeman.
Biased.
The special bailiff made a public statement.
I'm managing this case. And I know what I'm about. These fellows are going to be hanged as certain as death.
I request a new trial.
Denied!
The mayor himself testified that he had been at Haymarket Square.
I saw no weapons. I mean, it was quite possible. I left during Mr. Parsons' speech and told the police captain that nothing was happening nor looked likely to happen that would require the police.
Witnesses testified that Police Captain Bonfield ordered a battalion of police to the peaceful protest and was eager to use force on strikers.
The trouble is that they get their women and children mixed up with them and around them and then in front of them. And then we can't get at them. Oh, I would like to get them in a crowd without their women and children, and I would make short work of them.
There is no evidence that any of us threw a bomb or that we had any intention to throw a bomb.
The state's case was built on the far-fetched notion of a secret conspiracy mysteriously connected to an unknown, never-identified bomber that no one had ever seen. To make matters worse, the judge's rulings and remarks were blatantly biased towards the prosecution.
Biased.
They're guilty! That one's married to a Negro!
Objection!
Deny!
Hang them!
The press attacked the 8 defendants as dangerous, rampaging enemies of the state.
Arrest that woman over there for not believing in God.
It's my right, goddammit!
Order! Order! This is clearly an overall plot to destroy the entire city of Chicago.
Even our old friends at the Knights of Labor said Albert should be made an example for the government. The verdict?
Guilty of being accessories before the fact to the murder of policeman Matthias Deegan by means of a bomb.
The sentence.
Oscar Neeb, 15 years in prison. Each of the other defendants, in the manner provided by the statute of this state, is to be hung by the neck until he is dead.
Samuel Fielden, 40-year-old teamster.
Louis Ling, 20-year-old carpenter.
August Spies, 31-year-old radical.
Michael Schwab, 29-year-old reporter.
Adolf Fischer, 28-year-old typesetter.
George Engel, 50-year-old radical.
Albert Parsons,
38-year-old typesetter.
Anarchy is on trial here.
Anarchist.
We are being tried for our beliefs.
Father.
We violated no laws.
Husband.
We exercise our rights to free speech, free press, and public assembly.
And the love of my life.
Flucy Parsons, more dangerous than 1,000 rioters. Here's a woman who, in Texas in 1853, is born as a slave. She earns her living as a dressmaker. Her husband is martyred. He's murdered by the state, one of the early political prisoners. What a remarkable woman, committed to anti-lynching law, committed to Scottsboro, to workers' rights. What's the legacy for you, Melody? You wrote the play. You've acted in some ways. As I watch you do the reading, you're transformed. Or are you transformed? Is this part of your persona and your reality? Is there a melding with the spirit of Lucy Parsons?
Yeah, I feel that there is. Sometimes I feel possessed by her. We share the same drive for human equality and that kind of fight for freedom. I remember sitting on my dad's shoulders singing We Shall Overcome. And I know that there's a commonality between what I believe and what Lucy strongly believed. And I think as an actress, I almost feel as if I'm not performing. I feel as if there's an opportunity for me to embody something more than just doing a role, that there's something important to be, I don't want to use the word channeled exactly, but something to give back through my work, not just as a writer, but as an actress. And there's a kind of power that theater has to do that. And so for me, this is a great opportunity. And I'm really happy that Multistages has chosen my play and that it's being produced. And a lot of the work that Lucy and Albert did, it was to crowds. It was to groups of people. And that's what theater can do. You get a group of people in a space and you get to share this energy and these ideas. And so it's kind of a miniature forum for what they did.
I want to address that a little bit because, first of all, she was her play was the winner of a contest that we held. I mentioned that earlier. And we'd like to find a venue that we think is really appropriate to the particular play that we're producing. I went downtown to the East Village and I found a wonderful theater on East 4th Street, The Crane. And I said, this is really, it has the intimacy that I'm looking for. The actors can walk into the audience. There's a connection between the audience and the actors. It's small. It seats 98 people. And it just has that kind of feeling that exactly describes what Melody was just talking about. I'd like to just talk a little bit about some of the people that are involved in this production. Because it is multidisciplinary, we have brought in some terrific artists to work with us. One of them is Adam Larson, and he's a video designer, and he's actually a filmmaker. And he's going to be taking all these incredible drawings and engravings that we've been able to get thanks to the internet and all kinds of exciting opportunities with like the Library of Congress. There are hundreds and hundreds of incredible images of the time period and actually of the Haymarket riot. There were a lot of covers of Harper's Magazine and newspaper cartoons and all kinds of things that we're going to have in the play. And Adam is going to animate these for us. Also, Peter Janis is going to be building the sets and costumes for us. Peter actually years ago was the set and costume designer for Grandma Sylvia's funeral. So that was kind of fun if anybody happened to see that. It's just a really great company of people. We're all labor activists. We're all in the union. Everybody who's involved in this is in one union or another. We all love the cause and it's inexpensive theater, which is really great as opposed to all the very expensive theater we have in New York.
Michael, Albert Jr. and Albert Sr., what has it meant to play these characters, to be in this play with its multifaceted and dimensional, multidisciplinary aspects, and with such a wonderful stage director and such a very fine playwright?
Oh, it's wonderful. I mean, like you salivate to play roles like this that have so many different layers on top of them, and that you're able to have something that's also just so relevant to the way that you feel as a human being, you know, because so much of the stuff that we wind up doing is just stuff. It's great that we come along, and it was just a blessing to even be found by Lorca and her vision, you know, and to come in on this. I care about injustice, you know, wherever right. it is, and that's what this play is about. It's about historical people, and it's about a historical event, but it's not really a historical play. It's a play that very much that is going on right now outside of your door if you open up the newspaper and read between the lines. So that's what this play is.
And definitely the opportunity to play a historical figure like Albert Parsons is important also because of the labor issues, because that is my heritage. My ancestor, our work came over from Ireland and Germany and moved to Chicago right after this. And they were like, my grandfather was a typesetter. It's just kind of the ironies of it all. And then, of course, here we are. We're all union actors. We're all working with this, what is now kind of a dying institution. I mean, the labor unions have lost so much strength, but still it's something that I feel very strongly about. And so to play this character is going to be – it's really going to mean a lot. And I know we're going to affect people, which is –
That's
basic.
The purpose of theater.
Exactly. It was exactly what I took the words out of my mouth. That is the idea,
is that
you know, people aren't going to walk out at intermission.
Right.
And there are a lot of people, most people, when they ask me, what's your play about? And I start to tell them about Lucy and Albert Parsons. They've never heard of them. They were infamous at the time. They were written up in every newspaper. Everyone knew who they were, and they've disappeared. And so this is a way to revive them and also – and this cause was very – It was a dangerous thing. I mean, there was a lot of violence surrounding it. The railroad strike that went on during that time that they supported, people in Pittsburgh were the militia, which was the, what we know of now as the National Guard, shot into a crowd, killed women and children who were unarmed. Mm-hmm. This is our history, and we can't forget this part of our history.
Lorca Perez, artistic director and founder of Multistages. Melody Cooper, award-winning playwright and actress of Day of Reckoning, and Freedom Bradley, who played Albert Parsons Jr., Michael Canale, who played Albert Parsons Sr. Special thanks to our engineer, Spida Blue Rider, and Ken Nash, co-producer and co-host of Building Bridges, Your Community and Labor Report.